Good morning and welcome to our podcast. My name is David Pritchard and I'm the head of marketing here at Sintons. I'm joined today by my colleague Fiona Campbell, who is an associate in the employment team here at Sintons. And our podcast today is episode 2 in our Top Tips for GPs podcast series. The podcast today, which will last approximately 5 to 10 minutes, is going to concentrate on dealing with disciplinaries. So without any further ado, straight over to Fiona. Fiona, good morning and over to you.
Thanks, David. And hello, everyone. Thanks ever so much for listening today. As David mentioned, this is the second in our top tips series for GPs and practice managers. Today, I'm going to give you some top tips on dealing with disciplinaries. In this context, I'm talking about misconduct issues rather than performance or capability concerns, although I'm sure this will be a topic for a future podcast. The first thing to do when dealing with a disciplinary is to check whether you already have a disciplinary procedure in place. This would usually be in your staff handbook, should you have one. If you do, then you should ensure that you follow it, provided it complies with the minimal requirements of the ACAS code. This podcast will predominantly focus on those requirements, as well as give some hopefully helpful tips. The three main stages to a disciplinary procedure: investigation, disciplinary meeting, and then a potential appeal if appropriate. The first thing to do is to consider the appropriate people to deal with each stage of this process. Main points to consider when deciding who would be appropriate are seniority and objectivity. In terms of seniority, while this is less relevant for the investigating officer, it is important for the people hearing the disciplinary and the appeal. When it comes to the disciplinary, the disciplining officer needs to be sufficiently senior to be able to make the decision they're being asked to make. For instance, if a potential outcome of the process is that the employee will be dismissed, the person chairing the disciplinary needs to have the authority to make that decision. In addition, if the employee chooses to appeal, then the person hearing the appeal should ideally be more senior than the person who chaired the disciplinary. This is because they need to have the authority to overturn the original decision if they think that's appropriate. While a more junior person could technically be given that authority, it also needs to be realistic that they would feel capable of overturning the original decision. Clearly, this would be less likely if the person who heard the disciplinary is actually the boss of the person hearing the appeal. So once the roles have been allocated, the next step in dealing with the allegations of misconduct is to investigate them. In most cases, this will involve meeting with the person raising the allegations, where appropriate, as well as the actual employee. Provided your policy doesn't say otherwise, the employee being investigated is not entitled to be accompanied to this meeting, unless it would be appropriate to make an exception, such as for a disabled employee. There's no need to issue the employee with an invitation for this meeting. In fact, I would generally suggest that you don't give the employee notice of this meeting. I'd also suggest that you don't give them any information regarding the allegations prior to this meeting. This is because there are less requirements as to how you should investigate, just that you actually have to undertake an investigation. As a result, it can be your opportunity to get the employee's initial response rather than what they would have prepared after a couple of days to think about it. So while it might seem to be going against what you'd imagine to be the case, so you'd feel that you should send an invitation to invite them to an investigatory, and you'd feel that you should give them a heads up about everything, there's not actually any legal obligation to do so. And it can sort of put you a bit ahead of the curve if you actually are able to get them into a meeting and get their honest initial response without giving them a lot of time to get their ducks in a row. As part of the investigation, you should also collate whatever witness or documentary evidence is necessary. This could include things such as emails, CCTV footage, time records, or any other relevant documents. In terms of witness evidence, you should meet with the witnesses and ask them questions. You should avoid simply asking them to provide a statement, as this can cause more questions than it answers and can often fail to address the key issues. Once you've completed the investigation, you should decide whether or not it's appropriate to proceed with a disciplinary, and if so, whether it requires a formal process or if an informal warning would suffice. Assuming you've decided to proceed with a formal process, you should write to the employee inviting them to attend a disciplinary meeting. In the letter, you should set out the allegations sufficiently clearly that they'll be able to respond to them at the meeting. For instance, if the issue is repeated lateness, you need to give dates and times, not simply say that they're often late. Similarly, if the issue is attitude, you must give clear examples of when they've demonstrated a poor attitude, again giving dates and times where possible. It would be wholly inappropriate to allege that an employee has, for instance, bullied a colleague without giving very clear examples of what constituted the bullying and exactly when it occurred. You should also ensure that the letter gives them at least 2 working days notice of the meeting, inform them of the right to be accompanied at the meeting by a colleague or trade union official, and provide them with all of the evidence that you'll be taking into account when making your decision, whether it supports your position or not. At the meeting, you should present the evidence to the employee and give them the opportunity to respond to the allegations. Someone should attend the meeting with you to take notes if possible. I'd avoid recording the meeting as counterintuitively, it can give a false record of the meeting. For instance, an important point that is made could be missed because someone's talking over someone else or a person has conceded a point, but not verbally. If written notes are made, then the key points should make it into the notes. The disciplining officer should consider whether any points raised in the meeting need to be investigated further. If not, then they should consider the evidence and what happened at the meeting and make a decision. The decision should be conveyed to the employee in writing. They should be given details as to why that decision was reached and, assuming a disciplinary sanction is being issued, how long it will last. They should also be given the right to appeal. They should be informed of the deadline by when any appeal needs to be lodged. If the employee appeals against the decision, they should be invited to an appeal meeting within a reasonable time frame. They should be informed of the right to be accompanied at the appeal meeting. At the appeal meeting, you should ask them to go over the grounds of the appeal in sufficient detail that they can be properly understood and investigated further if necessary. If new information has come to light between the disciplinary meeting and the appeal meeting, then it needs to be considered. The employee should be informed of the appeal outcome and advised that they have no further recourse. So that was a bit of a flying look at how to deal with disciplinaries. I hope you found this helpful. Please do join us for our next in the Top Tips for GPs series. And please don't hesitate to contact me if you have any questions. Thanks again for joining us. Goodbye.
Thanks, Fiona. Enjoyed listening to that. Very quickly for me, we release our webinars, podcasts, and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. You can also follow the healthcare and employment teams on Twitter at SintonsHC or at SintonsHR. If you'd like to discuss anything Fiona's raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with her or a member of the team. Fiona can be contacted via telephone 0191 226 7878 or via email fiona.campbell@sintons.co.uk. Episode 3 will be with you in approximately 2 to 3 weeks' time. Thanks to everyone who's listened to the first session. We do appreciate you taking the time to listen to them, and we look forward to engaging with you for episode 3. Thank you. Stay safe, everyone.